Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com. Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Monday, April 13, 2020. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me. He's social distancing at home. I'm social distancing at home, and it's been a busy and meaningful, you know, past few days on the who's staying, who's going front as it relates to the NBA draft. On Friday, Creighton's Tyshawn Alexander announced he's in the NBA draft. And then on Monday, Kentucky's Emmanuel Quickley announced he's in the NBA draft. Neither is a projected first-round pick. Now, Tyshawn Alexander is leaving the option of returning to Creighton on the table, although by his own admission, he's like 70-30 out the door. So he's not definitely gone, but it's reasonable to assume he's likely gone. Same as Quickley is definitely gone. Kentucky was number two in the top 25-1 under the assumption Quickley would be back. Creighton was number three in the top 25-1 under the assumption Alexander would be back. Now those schools, they're number 9 and number 10 respectively. And Norlander, we've talked about this before, but I guess it's worth repeating. Year in and year out, these are the types of decisions that shape the top of the sport. The schools that compete for the national title are often schools that get legitimate NBA prospects to return to school. So in that regard, this has been a tough little stretch for Kentucky and Creighton, hasn't it?
Yeah, I expected Creighton to lose Alexander only because, and it's still not definite, and I'll also include that because of the uncertain nature surrounding everything with the NBA draft, no one knowing if it's going to eventually happen as scheduled because maybe the NBA season gets canceled, then why would you push the draft back? Or if it gets pushed back regardless of whether the season gets canceled or not, or even put into mid to late August, all that stuff, I think, brings about the possibility that players in a normal season that would have otherwise gone might wind up returning. I don't think that's going to be the case with Alexander because of how good defensively he is, and he's proven to be year over year a pretty valuable offensive player. Now, because of that, Creighton just takes a little bit of a ding. It's still a strong team. Where do you have Creighton in your repurposed, repositioned 5.0, top 25-1? Where did you move them to? Where are they now?
I think we are actually up to 6.0 now.
Okay.
And so Creighton is now Kentucky's now number 9, yep, under the assumption they lose Emmanuel Quickley and also Nick Richards. Creighton is now number 10 under the assumption that Tyshawn Alexander remains in the NBA draft.
All right. And so you had Creighton 2 or 3 before?
I had Kentucky 2 and Creighton 3. That's so they both, yeah, dropped 7 spots.
Okay. By the way, yeah, you're at 6.0. You should keep this up because I do think if I'm setting the over-under at 23.5, I'm actually going to take the over for your off-season rankings. Just keep going, keep going, keep going. The fact that you're already at 6.0 on April 13th, check back in a week, and we might be closing in on version 9 or 10 there. It's a ding for Creighton, but it still brings back a lot. Like, still should definitely be a team that's right there, close with Nova to contend for the Big East. And then Kentucky, man, Quickley, he's gone. And after being one of the most improved year over year players in the country, why would you not? He had an opportunity, his right to pass on it, but man, he had an opportunity to like potentially be a player of the year next season, depending on, you know, other guys that could come back. Luka Garza, is he going to come back? We still wait on draft decisions from guys we expect that could come back and be good, like Devon Dotson. You mentioned Richards probably going to go. Would think Malachi Flynn, what he does. Point being, Quickley would have been in that conversation, being the SEC Player of the Year. So it is a hit for a Kentucky team that brings in a good, good class. But it's losing enough guys here. Lost Johnny Juzang to UCLA as well. So I'll be interested to see what Kentucky eventually looks like. You know, if you're a UK fan, I know you were hoping just, all right, Quickley or Richards, let us keep one of the two. and I thought Quickley was more likely of the two to be the one that returns, but that doesn't like it looks like it's going to be a case. So you didn't ask me this explicitly, GP, but I will say that losing Quickley to me is more damaging to Kentucky than Alexander being lost at Creighton.
I think that's probably true, just because, I mean, there you go, just totally restarting from scratch again at UK. Like, at least at Creighton, they return presumably every other important piece from a team that was the number one seed in the Big East tournament. At Kentucky, now you lose Emmanuel Quickley. We're saying you lose Nick Richards. You lose Tyrese Maxey. You lose Ashton Hagans. You lose Nate Sestina. You lose Johnny Juzang. Leading returning scorer, E.J. Montgomery, 6.1 points. I mean, that's just – you're just starting over. Now, they bring in Davion Mintz from Creighton. They've got the number one recruiting class in America, 3 5-star prospects in that. So, like, they're still going to be good. But the best John Calipari teams have been teams that return some meaningful pieces. And you're just not returning a meaningful piece now. I mean, maybe E.J. Montgomery can have – you know, the type of jump that Nick Richards had, I'm not ruling anything out. They're still involved in the transfer market. Matt Harms from Purdue has cut his list to 10 and Kentucky is obviously on it, but it's just starting all over again. It's just tough. It doesn't mean you can't win a national championship. It just means that you don't usually win a national championship. And this is now the fourth consecutive year, I looked it up this morning, where Kentucky is losing its top four scores. Fourth consecutive year. Now, usually, at least two of them are first-round draft picks. In fact, every year that John Calipari's been at Kentucky, he has lost multiple first-round draft picks. And yet, this year, it doesn't look like he's going to, but he's still losing four players early to the NBA draft, because the only one projected to go in the first round, Tyrese Maxey. The other three, Quickley, Richards, and Hagans, all projected second round picks if they get picked at all.
Is Kentucky too high in your rankings now because of this?
Well, I would just say that, I mean, maybe. I mean, listen, Kentucky, one way to describe Kentucky is they won the SEC by multiple games. The other way to describe Kentucky is they finished 29th at KenPom. They're losing the top four scores from a team that was barely top 30 at KenPom, and they are they're replacing it with some incredible freshmen. When you don't bring back meaningful people, it's just tough. Here's what I would think. Here would be my assumption: Kentucky will be preseason right around top 10. And if you want to have them lower than that, by all means, that's not where I'm going to start picking a fight with you. They will, in November, December, perhaps in early January, have a little stretch where you go, is this even a top 25 team? And then by March, they'll look like a legitimate Final Four contender. That is what Kentucky built like this typically is.
Maybe. And listen, this is going to be putting the cart 200 yards in front of the horse here. But everyone's gone except Montgomery. Even the guys that weren't big contributors, Keon Brooks, Khalil Whitney, who's trying to become a pro here. Like, and I understand he left during the season, I guess, but they're all gone. Hagans, Maxey, Quickley, Richards, Brooks, Whitney, Sestina, Juzang. The only guy is Montgomery, and I would think that he's got a return there. I couldn't put Kentucky preseason top 15. Now, you bring in Davion Mintz. Okay, so he's going to have to step up and be a huge dude. Here's Davion Mintz last season. The season before, I should say. 9.7 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, shot 42% from the field, 35% from 3. He's a solid player. Not convinced that he's going to be the kind of guy that can step in at Kentucky and be that much more, that much better than what he was at Creighton. Keep an eye on that. I think Kentucky getting Harms, and I don't know if it will. I have no idea, like, if Kentucky is perceived to be in the top 3 to get him or what, how that actually stands. But getting him would actually go a long way, in my opinion, at validating Kentucky as a preseason top 15 kind of team, including a very good class coming in. But we've seen this plenty of times before. I would just I would pump the brakes a little bit on them, and then we see what'll happen with Harms. If they don't get Harms, see what other transfer they might wind up picking up here or there. It'll be intriguing. But yeah, I know this isn't a total shock for Kentucky in general, but when you look at it, and I haven't done the research here, but I got to think this is as drastic of a turnover year over year. I know Kentucky, it's old hat, but you know, you lose everyone except one guy that was getting actual minutes there. And so that'll prove to be a significant challenge for John Calipari. And on some level, I know this is how he has turned Kentucky into a gargantuan power. And it's why Calipari is going to be, can say now, and will be able to retire whenever that is, and saying, I recruited and coached more future NBA players than any coach in the history of college basketball. That's a pretty awesome thing. But with that, you also get these kind of headache's not the right word, GP, but just it's just, you know, constantly. The Jenga tower's falling apart, and you're just building it again and again year over year, and next year will be a challenge.
It's a hard way to make $10 million a year. I can acknowledge that. Like, it must be exhausting. Like, you're just constantly having to start over, and you have incredible advantages. You're starting over with one of the most talented rosters in the country in most seasons. But like, starting over is every year is very difficult. And like you say, this is old hat at Kentucky. This is life in Lexington. But I will say, the thing that makes this different is that it is one thing when you lose 2 first-round picks, 3 first-round picks, 4 first-round picks, 5 first-round picks. It's one thing when you lose your top 4 scorers and only one of them is projected to go in the first round. Like, more often than not over the years, John Calipari has been able to get the second round picks to come back to school. I shouldn't say more often than not, but like, often he's able to get the second round picks to come back to school. You put him with a first round with a number one recruiting class. Now you're ready to go. This year, he's like, you know, he loses 3 projected second round picks. That's tough. Like, you don't have to cry for Kentucky. They'll be fine, but that's tough. I mentioned that, more that year after year, what we find is that the teams that are competing for national titles are often teams that benefit from this in the way that Kentucky and Creighton seem to be getting hurt by this. You know, in other words, legitimate NBA prospects coming back to school. Like, they could reasonably leave, just like Emmanuel Quickley, Nick Richards, Tyshawn Alexander could reasonably leave, but they decide to come back to school. And if you just look at college basketball this past season, that's the top of the sport. Like, I went and pulled the KenPom rankings, final KenPom standings. Kansas was number 1. They were led by Devon Dotson, who would have been at the least a second-round pick after his freshman season, but decided to come back to school. He helps Kansas finish first at KenPom, and they would have been the favorite to win the 2020 NCAA tournament. Dayton, you know, Obi Toppin would have been a second-round pick at worst if he entered the 2019 NBA draft. Decides to go back to Dayton for a second year. Dayton finishes 4th at KenPom. Trey Jones could have been a first-round pick after his freshman year. Decides to come back to Duke. Duke finishes 5th at KenPom. Cassius Winston would have been a borderline, like, he – and I bounced this – by the way, I'm not just spitballing here. I bounced all of this off of multiple people, including our old pal Sam Vecini. Cassius Winston could have been a second-round pick, certainly could have gotten some sort of professional contract, decides to come back to Michigan State. Michigan State finishes 7th at KenPom. Jordan Wara, second-round pick in 2019 if he wanted to be, decides to come back to Louisville, and Louisville finishes 9th at KenPom. Jalen Smith could have been picked somewhere if he wanted to in 2019, decides to come back to Maryland. Maryland finishes 11th at KenPom. In other words, 6 of the top 11 in KenPom's final standings benefited from a legitimate NBA prospect returning to school. If you are trying to figure out who's going to compete for the national championship, look for that pattern. Because 2017 national champion, North Carolina, benefited from Justin Jackson coming back to school. 2008 national champion, Villanova, benefited from Jalen Brunson and Mikal Bridges coming back to school. 2019 champion, Virginia, benefited from DeAndre Hunter coming back to school. There's a trend here, and Kentucky and Creighton at this moment are on the wrong side of it heading into next season.
Yeah, I would argue that Obi Toppin would not have been drafted a year ago, and I would put him in the same conversation that you just put with Winston there. He was definitely a rising prospect. I don't expect that if we'd gone alternate universe that he would have been there. But regardless, the point is he became one in general.
let me just say this. Sam Vecenie, our old colleague who now works at The Athletic, when I asked him about Toppin, he said, and he, like, his job is to deal with the draft. That's right. What he does. He said that multiple NBA teams were trying to get Toppin to stay in with a second round promise, and he decided to, quote, bet on himself, come back to school. But that, according to Sam, at the very least, Toppin would have been picked.
All right. Well, Sam's obviously on this podcast, and he'll have a chance to speak up for himself later on during the show here. And that might be possible. The point is, he became one regardless there. If you look at the end of season Pomeroy standings, if you look inside the top 15, Florida State has it. BYU doesn't, but they're almost the exception to the rule. And it's not like Yoeli Childs put his name in, so they do have a prospect there. But BYU is an exception in general whenever they can get good, because they just half the roster is always at least 21 years old, and there's a certain advantage to that in general. West Virginia finished 10th. It's actually bringing back Culver, Deuce McBride, and Oscar Tshiebwe, so it'll be intriguing to see a year from now how WVU presumably will have been helped by such a decision there. And, you know, they have guys who I think can eventually transform into NBA prospects. And then the only one that's not really the case of all the teams you mentioned is Ohio State. You know, Caleb Wesson's going to chase a pro career, get all that. I don't even know if he's – I've lost track of who's declared and who hasn't, honestly. But I was told that that is definitely happening. So if it hasn't happened yet, I would anticipate it soon, along with other guys that we haven't heard from yet, like Jade McDaniels at Washington, Cole Anthony at Carolina, Jamias Ramsey, Texas Tech. We mentioned Richards and Dotson. On and on it goes. But Ohio State's the only one that really didn't have that finished top 10, top 15 in KenPom, and didn't really have a viable, I think, you know, pro prospect surefire thing. Wesson was a really good player, can shoot, but I'm not convinced with him there. But you're right about the points you make, GP, with Creighton and Kentucky specifically. And this is what really boils down to when you get to coaching at a power conference level, how you recruit and how you assemble your roster. Obviously you want to get guys in that can go on to be pros, because few things are as impactful in you getting players than you saying, look who we brought in and look where they wound up. Okay. Guys need to see, oh, other guys have gone to that place and gone to the NBA. So the machine kind of feeds itself that way. And so with that, when you have that talent, not always, but you know, the majority of the time, you are going to be able to have a situation that enables you to be a top seed and therein helps your chances of winning a national championship.
Like I pointed out, six of the top 11 at KenPom benefited from legitimate NBA prospects returning to school. Only two teams at most in the top 11 were led by freshmen this past season. Six of the top 11 led by legitimate NBA prospects who came back to school. Only two of the top 11 at most were led by freshmen. One is a team you mentioned, West Virginia, Oscar Tshiebwe. And the other, depending on how you want to discuss Duke, you know, Duke had Vernon Carey. So you could say that Duke was led by Vernon Carey instead of Trey Jones. But either way, it certainly broke down a certain way, which, and I'll bottom line this with this, you know, there's still some massive decisions out there that could impact the top of the sport. Like at Gonzaga, Philip Petrusha, Corey Kispert, second round picks. Are they coming back to school? If they do, Gonzaga should be preseason number one. If they don't, maybe not. At Villanova, does Sadiq Bey withdraw from the NBA draft? If he does, Villanova could be preseason number one. If he doesn't, they're still going to be very good. But if he doesn't, probably not preseason number one. At Iowa, I think we all assume Luka Garza is going to withdraw from the draft, but he'll have to withdraw from the draft. At Kansas, like Devon Dotson still, you know, like we talk about Devon Dotson like he's gone, and I suspect that he is, but it's not like he's going to lottery pick. He's a second round pick. Does he want to come back to school? If he does, maybe Kansas is preseason number one. So there's still some big time decisions out there that could impact the top of the sport, and as they become official one way or another, we'll obviously address them on this podcast. Meantime, Stanford got a commitment from five-star wing Zaire Williams on Sunday. How good are the Cardinal going to be next season? We'll get into that next, but first, let me tell you about Coors Light. Do you ever feel like you're always on, never relaxing? I know I do, and that is no way to live. It's important to turn off every once in a while, and Coors Light perfect for that. It's Coors Light, mountain cold refreshment made to chill. There's only one beer literally made to chill, and that is Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. That way you always know when it's time to chill. As the summer months draw closer, you're going to want cold refreshments. Coors Light is perfect for that. It's brewed with a three-step cold process, cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. Born in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado, 1978, Coors Light is refreshing, crisp, and only 102 calories, so it's healthy. That's why Coors Light's the beer I choose when I need to relax. You should choose it, too. So when you want to reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. It's Coors Light, mountain cold refreshment, just 102 calories. And always remember to celebrate responsibly. That's Coors Light, Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. So big news for Stanford on Sunday. Got a commitment from five-star wing Zaire Williams on Sunday. Played at Sierra Canyon with Bronny James. And so now Stanford, interesting situation here. Probably a little off most people's radar until they add a big piece like Zaire Williams. But depending on what Tyrell Terry does, and he's entered the NBA draft but left open the option of returning to school. And he's exactly what we were talking about earlier. Projected second-round pick who could reasonably stay in the draft or reasonably return to school. If he returns to school, Stanford would return the top six scorers from a team that finished top 45 at KenPom, and they would be adding a five-star wing in Zaire Williams to that equation. You a believer in the Cardinal if Terry comes back?
I'm a believer that over the next year, at least 30 times on this podcast, we are going to accidentally say Zion Williamson instead of Zaire Williams.
Well, the other thing, as I'm reading his name, he spells it just it's too much going on.
Z-I-A-I-R-E.
Yeah, it's just too much, man.
Zaire Williams, and we won't be the only ones. The Zion Williamson flubs are coming hot and heavy over the next 12 months or so.
You know what else I struggle with? Like, in terms of names, just Tyus Jones and Trey Jones. For whatever reason, those still get mixed up in my head sometimes.
That's obvious. I understand why. Yeah.
And then there's Trey Young. I get confused with somebody. Who do I get Trey Young confused with?
Bogdan Bogdanovich.
Yes, it is Killian Tilly. But Trey Young, I would often say something other than Trey Young for whatever reason. I don't know who it is now.
I hear you. I do love this, though. I love Stanford getting a five-star guy.
It might also be Trey Jones. It might be I confused Trey Jones with Tyus Jones or Trey Young. I just got a lot of problems with Trey's.
Okay. When I did my top 101 tournament games, you know, going through the mid to late 90s, early 2000s, I was reintroduced with just how awesome for about an 8-9 year run Stanford was. And by awesome, I mean Stanford for almost a decade under Mike Montgomery was a top 10 program in America. It turned into a powerhouse. I don't know if it can ever truly get back to that point, but it's got a really good shot at being a top 10, top 15 team next season. Now, I remember, we have talked the Cardinal on a couple of podcasts over the previous 5 months, and every time we would talk about him, it would start with some optimism, and then they'd go play terribly because their record was gaudier than where they placed in the projective metrics, and we came to find out why that was the case there. So we'll see. You know, you bring back a lot, so much of your scoring, rebounding, defense, all that good stuff if you're Jared Haas. And Stanford will be in a position next season. It'll be one of, GP, maybe three or four teams in a power conference that will be standing on the doorstep of its most anticipated season in more than a decade, more than 15 years. That will be the case with the Cardinal there. Williams is a 6'7 wing. You mentioned he played at Sierra Canyon. And, yeah, it's Stanford beats out big boys and keeps them in state, and that's fantastic. So they've got four pledges in the class, according to 247 Sports' Evan Daniels. They're also bringing a four-star named Max Morrell and two three-star guys named Noah Tates and Brandon Angel. So big-time move for the Cardinal. Now, you put them in your top 25 and one because of this. Where are they now ranked?
I believe I have them at 24. I dropped LSU after Trendon Watford announced he's in the draft, didn't seem to suggest that he ain't coming back. So I dropped LSU down to 25. So the top of the top 25 and one now is number one, Gonzaga, number two, Baylor, number three, Villanova, number four, Virginia, number five, Houston. The bottom, would be number 20 Texas, number 21 UCLA, number 22 Oregon, number 23 Rutgers, number 24 Stanford, number 25 LSU, number 26 Florida State. And because people are always asking, I pointed it out in one of the recent versions of the top 25 and one. Stanford going in pushes Arkansas down to what would be number 27. Florida would right now be number 28. Indiana would be number 29. And Louisville would be number 30 if I actually did a top 25 and 5.
All right, there we have it. Now, Stanford, by the way, finished the season 20-12. Something to keep in mind going forward. We'll see how last season's team reflects this next season's team, but it went 11-2 against a non-conference schedule that ranked 301 in the country and lost its games to the two best teams it played against Kansas. It got romped, and that was a home loss for Stanford, and then it lost to Butler. And then in Pac-12 play, went 9-9, and that, in fact, played a Pac-12 tournament game before the season ended on Wednesday, March 11th. It lost to a bad Cal team going forward. Williams, by the way, represents the best recruiting get for the program since the likes of, I guess, Josh Childress. I mean, it has been a long, long time. And Childress would have been like 02, 03. Maybe the Lopez twins. I don't know where they were ranked, but one of those two. It's been a long time since Stanford got a significant commitment from such a highly regarded player like this. So it'll be a fun, interesting season for the Cardinal, who should probably be a top 10 to top 15 defense in America next season. They finished the season 7th in points per possession allowed at the end of the season.
The Lopez twins were studs coming out of high school. Just a random story real quick. I remember talking to Mark Fox once upon a time. He used to work for Trent Johnson, and Trent got the Stanford job. And as Foxy tells the story, right after he gets the job, you know, when you get a new job, you're certainly, particularly if it's a level up, you're recruiting at a new level. You're suddenly targeting people you would have never targeted at your other job. And Trent was like, Foxy, what do you know about these Lopez twins? And he was like, you should definitely recruit them. They're good enough. They're good enough. And so they end up playing at Stanford. So, yeah, the Zaire Williams commitment is a big time gift for Stanford, and the type of thing that it's going to give them a chance to not only be preseason ranked, but also compete at the at the top of the Pac-12, maybe even win a Pac-12 title. Norlander, he says he's got something fun to close the podcast with. What is it? I have no idea. We'll get to it next. But first, check this out.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000
$15,000 a day. It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.
So as we were planning the podcast, and by planning, I mean like just trying to figure out a window in which we can get it done with our families completely at home with no exceptions, Norlander sent me a text. He said, hey, I've got something that I'll hit you with. Just make room for it. And so this is me making room for it. Hit me with something, Norlander.
I got two things. First of all, we got to do some house cleaning on the season here. We just haven't had it between just the insanity of the end of the season and all the conversations we had after that. We just haven't gotten to this stuff. So, first of all, we did spend every Friday with the final 4-1. And the final standings for the picks for that, by the way, let the record reflect. I went 48-41-1. We had 90 total games we picked according to KenPom projections and picked it against the spread therein. And you went 40-49-1. So good job, I guess, because I expected worse. Now, we never came to an agreement on. We did it, and it was fun. Next season, we need to have something we do, some sort of fun wager in advance, okay? Maybe you just you buy me a lunch at some point if we ever get to see each other again, okay? Something like that.
Like we'll ever be allowed to go to lunch again in this country. It's over, Norlander. It's over with.
Yeah, I know. It's not good. All right, so the other thing that we did have a wager attached to was, you probably don't remember this, but listeners will, in the preseason – and give you credit because this was your idea and I loved it. We made over-under projection picks on the regular season win totals. Do you remember this?
I don't remember what I said about anything, but I do remember I remember the concept, sure.
That's right. Well, I have the results of how that played out. Now, before I share those, do you remember what the stakes of the wager were?
Was it a concert?
It was a concert.
Like we'll ever go to concerts in the country. It's over with, Norlander. It's over with. I'll buy you a ticket to an Instagram live concert. That's the only thing we got going.
I know. This is no over. One could have possibly foreseen what exactly we've gone through here. It's unfortunate. Yeah, that's a big time bummer. But I do have the results and what we picked here, and why this works so well is because it was only for the regular season. There were no conference tournaments baked into these projections, so we were able to successfully do this. And I want to give a shout out, by the way, to Matt Grahovac, Grahovac. Matt, I hope I'm saying your name correctly. He tracked this when we recorded it, and then he reminded me in a direct message a few weeks back of what actually hit and what missed and how we both wound up. So, you ready?
I'm going to assume you won, otherwise you wouldn't be bringing it up.
You could be assuming incorrectly. We agreed, we made picks on 14 teams. We agreed on 6 of them in terms of whether we both said they'd be over or we both said they'd be under. The teams we agreed on were Duke, Carolina, Nova, Virginia, Louisville, Texas Tech. The other 8 we disagreed on. I'm going to roll through them right now. First team, Gonzaga, over under 27.5 wins. We both took the under. We lose. Gonzaga won 31 games. Number 2, Memphis, preseason projection. What do you think it was?
I don't know.
Just regular season.
It was up there pretty good.
26.5. They won 21 games. We both win. We both said they would be under. Duke, 25.5. They went under. They went 25. I had it right. You had it wrong. I had under 25. You had over 25. Michigan State, also 25.5. We flamed out. We both had the over. They only won 22 games. Kentucky, we agreed. They won 25 games. The over-under was 24.5. We both said Kentucky would be over, and we were correct. Uh-oh. Next one. You got it. And oh, my gosh. North Carolina in the preseason was projected to win 24.5 games. Actual wins, 14. I went over. That's a miss. You went under. You hit it. Nova, 24.5. Under, I was correct. Over, you were incorrect. They won 24. Just a few more here. Kansas, we both got it. We both said they'd win more. They did. It was 24.5. Virginia was 23.5. You were right. I was wrong. They hit 23 wins. I had the over. You had the under. Louisville, congrats, GP. You had the over correctly. They won 24 games after the preseason mark was 22.5. I had the under. We both landed correctly on the under for Ohio State. It's amazing how close this stuff is, by the way. 22.5 in the preseason. They won 21. We both hit Texas Tech. I went under. I played it right. They were 22.5. They won 18 games. You had the over, so you were incorrect there. And then the last two, we both got the first one right. We both got the second one wrong. We were both correct at Maryland, over 20.5 wins. The Terps won 24, much to the chagrin of Terrapins fans. And then the last one we did was Arizona at 22.5. They won 21. We both said they'd win more. They won fewer. We both got it wrong. And after all of that, we both went 8-6. Both went 8-6. So there's no ticket buying anyway. It doesn't matter because concerts might not happen again for like 7 years. It is what it is. We wound up tying. And shouts to Matt for doing that. He also said, if you're going to do a tiebreaker, May I suggest incorporating some sort of athletic competition in which your dead leg and Parrish's tennis elbow is involved? Not a bad idea, except my leg is fully healed at this point, so I think I would win because Parrish, he's still holding out here. Unfortunately, again, like his tennis elbow situation, that's an elective surgery, so he's not even able to get that done for who knows how long. Before we wrap up the pod, GP, I'll throw it back over to you. How you doing over there? How is your tennis elbow situation?
I think I'm good.
Okay.
Like I over the past 3 weeks, probably, I've just, and it, I'll give credit to the doctors. Here's what they said to me. They said, you have to do these exercises, ice, you know, aspirin, that kind of stuff. They said, but this is weird because this isn't the way things usually work. But one day you'll wake up and it'll just be better. It won't gradually get better. It'll just not be there someday. And my left one healed back during the season. I just woke up one day and I recognized my arm's not hurting. This is nice. And my right one is, I can tell you this, because you spend a lot of time at home now, with, you know, playing a lot of catch with the boys, you know, shooting hoops, that kind of stuff. I just noticed one day I could throw a ball. I'm not exaggerating. 2 months ago, I could not throw a ball. I tried to go to Mike Conley's charity bowling thing back in whenever it was, like October, and I could not bowl. I couldn't roll a ball. But now I went in my backyard over the weekend and I swung a golf club. I could, because I wanted to see if I could go play golf, if we're ever in a position to play golf again, I can swing a golf club. I can still feel some tension in my right elbow. My left elbow, I feel nothing. My right elbow, I still feel some tension. But I can do everything I need to do right now with both arms. I'm pretty good. Just I'm trapped at home though. Can't do nothing. But like, if we ever get to a point in time where we can do things again, I'm gonna be ready to go.
All right, I like that. You and I have played golf together, by the way. We played out in Vegas, and I hope that you can get back out, because that's actually, I'm with you on that. We can't get out of bad weather here in Connecticut. Actually, as I record this podcast, like, it's really windy, and it's been raining sheets all morning here. We're waiting for 165-degree day. But if the courses allow for it, yeah, it'd be nice to just get out, walk, get that kind of thing done. And I'm glad to hear that you're on the mend. When we played together, by the way, real quick, I mean, when I say you and I played golf together in Vegas, what's the first memory that comes to mind?
It was 174
that's,
degrees.
That's correct.
All right?
That's,
and the clubhouse was closed.
That's correct.
Do you remember? I walked inside. I was like, yo, man, we're just going to get a couple of Gatorades or waters or whatever. And he was like, well, the restaurant's closed. I'm like, the restaurant's closed? He's like, yeah. I'm like, well, it's so hot outside that we're going to die. And he looks at me and I said, well, listen, I'm not asking you to cook me something. Like, you, I'm looking at a fridge of Gatorade right there. I would just like to purchase those. He's like, no, we're closed. I'm like, you got it. Like, is this a prank? Yeah. You won't sell me that thing that I'm looking at?
It was bad for a minute. We talked him into it, though. They got it done, right? We would not have been able to play if that was not – there was no shot that was going to happen. If we didn't have any sort of Gatorade or drinks, no shot. No.
It was like the guy – but I didn't remember that we actually got it resolved.
We did, yes.
But like, the idea that he was reluctant to provide us with water for cash was just like, dude, we're in the desert. It's the middle of the day, so we played golf. It was enjoyable, and I look forward to doing it again someday. Also, I look forward to like eating lunch in a restaurant again someday and going to a concert someday.
I'm right there with you, buddy. All right, buddy, you want to do the shouts?
Shouts to Devin Downey, to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry, MF, and Teagle, who just celebrated a birthday.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
Somebody tweeted us.
Hold on, real quick. I know we got to go. That, it is of my, see, it's, I someone drew our attention to it. Also, someone drew our attention to a cartoon that had the phrase Flying Dutchman on it. I don't even know what's going on. But when I saw it, I checked and I was doing a bunch of other stuff, so I forgot to follow up with it. It is my opinion that such a thing doesn't even get put out there if not for this podcast. I think that we have increased Terry Teagle awareness around the country, and rightfully so. He's the legend and deserves to be recognized as such.
He's a legend. Terry, MF, and Teagle. Shouts to Larnell. Please go subscribe to the Island College Basketball Podcast via Apple Podcasts. Rate it favorably. 5 stars, nice comments. That's all I've ever asked. And we will talk to you again real soon. Till then, take care.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together, we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.